Hello, everyone. Welcome to Cracking Addiction. My name is Dr. Fergal Armstrong, and we're going to respond to specific requests to talk about resilience today. So in my view, there are four key processes that are required to develop resilience. But before we go into them, we need to actually, think about, well, what does resilience mean in the context of AOD work? I've heard it defined as being able to say no. Being able to say no to the internal dialogue that allows you to slip into relapse. Being able to say no to someone who's actually offering you a drink or a cigarette or a drug. Being able to say no to certain practices that are going to overall reduce the quality of your life and impact upon your recovery in whichever way that might be. So given the strength that it takes to say no, where does that come from? And in my opinion, it comes from resilience. So how do we actually develop resilience? And for me, there are four key practical behaviors that I think will develop resilience, notwithstanding the fact that many other authors have said and written many other things about how to develop resilience. For me, it boils down to four key things. Number one, mastery. Number two, vicarious mastery. Number three, exhortation. And number four, emotional regulations. What does all that mean? So first of all, mastery. Mastery relies on the halo effect. If you're good at this, you're probably going to be good at that. So therefore, you've got to start out, you've got to start to develop the virtuous circle. You've got to start developing and achieving easy wins. Pick the low-hanging fruit, because when you get good at doing that, that builds up your confidence to then consider the ability to say no, to develop your resilience. So people who are confident, people who are used to achieving their goals, working hard, albeit, to achieve their goals, they then have resilience. So what does that look like in AOD? Well, it might be as basic as getting up at the same time every morning. It might be as basic as eating breakfast, going for exercise before you start the day. It might be making your bed. It's something as basic as that. But if that becomes part of your routine, that routine of mastery, that routine of success, that routine of achievement will then set you up for future mastery, for future achievement, and future resilience. So that's mastery. Well, what about vicarious mastery? Well, that presupposes that you have access to the stories of others, which means you then need emotional and social connection with people who are also committed to the same journey of recovery as you are. And where do we find such people? Well, the answer is in peer support groups. So vicarious mastery lives in peer support groups. And if you're not attending a peer support group, you're not exposing yourself to vicarious mastery. You're not exposing yourself to the stories that other people tell of how they manage to do it. Their recovery stories will wash off on you and give you the trigger, give you the confidence to say to yourself, well, if they can do it, why not I? Why not me? And that's the point when you start internalizing the lessons that someone else is giving you. So that is vicarious mastery, listening to the success stories of others and taking on board those lessons and putting those lessons into your practice. Then we have exhortation. Well, what is exhortation? Well, on a basic level, it comes from the Latin meaning to be shouted at or to be exhorted. In an AOD context, really, it means AOD counseling or psychological therapies, talking therapies that help you move from a position of not thinking that you have a problem through to thinking that you might have a problem and then thinking you might have to do something about it and then actually preparing to do something about it and then actually doing that thing and then actually maintaining recovery and then preventing relapse. So there are many stages in what we call the cycle of change, but exhortation in the form of counseling can help us through that cycle of change. Now, a lot of people have said to me, well, Fergal, I've attended counseling. I know what they're going to say. I know it all. To which I say, well, you might know it in your head, but do you know it in your heart? And secondly, I say, well, what's the point of tennis coaching? Well, what's the point of reading a book on how to play the piano? Whilst someone can give you the information, you've actually got to walk the journey. You've actually got to do practice. And so the point of a coach is that they watch you on that journey and they tell you what you're doing wrong or what you could improve step by step of the way. And they also act as some form of accountability. So there's a kind of a feedback loop of accountability involving correction. And so I think that's how we should see people in the AOD field who are providing patients or clients with counseling. They are exhorting their client, they're providing accountability, and they're making small minor adjustments on a regular basis, which over time then enable recovery and enable resilience. So that's the third source of resilience. And then finally, we come to emotional regulation. Now, it's very difficult to say no when you're upset. You've only got a certain amount of cognitive bandwidth, right? And if you're upset and if you're feeling that you can't cope with a particular challenge, whatever that might be, let alone the challenge of maintaining abstinence, then that will erode your confidence to actually achieve and maintain recovery. So it's very important to actually recognize in yourself the early warning signs of when you're feeling overwhelmed. And it's very important to be able to put into place techniques that will bring your mental state, your arousal levels down to a more calm level. You can't really say no. You can't be resilient when you are up in arms, when you are upset. So there, again, there's been a lot spoken about the specific techniques about how to be emotionally resilient, about how to control your emotions. I just want to share with you one particular emotional control technique that I've personally found very useful and that I teach all my patients, and that is the physiological sigh. So if we think about babies who cry, they cry and cry and cry, and then they have these sobs at the end. And that induces a change in our nervous system that just calms us down. So that sobbing looks like this. So it's multiple sniffs in through the nose, followed by a long exhale. So it looks like this. So the key thing is that you've got multiple, two or three, very fast, very powerful intakes of breath through the nose, followed by a long, gradual exhale. And that will very quickly increase the activity of our parasympathetic nervous system and will very quickly decrease the activity of our sympathetic nervous system, which will then have the effect of calming us down, giving us emotional regulation, and then allowing us to contemplate the challenge in front of us, which might be at that particular time, can I say no to this temptation? Can I say no to someone offering me a cigarette, a drink, or a drug? Now, in the longer term, you might also consider social connection and time spent with non-drug using peers. Again, going back to the peer support groups, but also time spent with non-drug using peers engaged in other meaningful activities. These two concepts, time spent with peers and meaningful activities, if we focus on those, they too will allow us to, in the longer term, regulate our emotions and allow us to develop resilience to achieve abstinence. So hopefully I've explained to you my ideas of how we can actually achieve resilience in order to achieve abstinence and a meaningful recovery. And let's just recap on those four key processes. Number one, mastery. Number two, vicarious mastery. Number three, exhortation. And lastly, number four, emotional regulation. Thanks for listening. That's all for today, folks. My name is Dr. Fergal Armstrong, and this has been Cracking Addiction.